Hi everyone, I'm Ronki and you're listening to Product Magic, a podcast dedicated to telling the stories of how product makers create product magic. As most of you know, for any organization, building successful and customer-oriented products is the main objective and goal. However, great organizations and their leaders build more than products. They build up the people around them with empathy, gratitude, and motivation. In today's episode, we're going to talk about building people and products with Parul. We'll discuss the importance of building people and why it's so important, especially in the last 19 months. Parul, can you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Yes, absolutely. Ronki, it's a pleasure to be on the podcast with you. My name is Parul Goyal, and I am a product leader by profession. Right now, I am a director of product for orders and billing at a company called Indeed, which is one of the largest search engines for jobs. It's a job marketplace. Before that, I was at PayPal for a very long time, where I met Ronki. And before that, I was a consultant in e-commerce for many, many years. So that's what I do for work. But outside of work, I am a huge TV junkie. I watch a lot of TV. And I am also very passionate about building people. And I'm very passionate, especially about getting voices of women heard. This is super important to me. To that end, I started a podcast called Unseen Battles, which I know Ronki will speak a little bit more about. But in a nutshell, that's who I am.
Thank you, Parul. Parul, thank you so much for joining our podcast today. Can you tell us how you got started in product management?
Yeah, so it was a little bit by accident. You know, as I mentioned, that I was a consultant for many years, and I was a business analyst as a consultant. So, which was, you know, my role was to engage in a client's project, understand their problem statement, and then work with the rest of the consulting team to fix it. So it's very similar to that of a product manager, but my title was a business analyst. So I did consulting for many years, and then I was ready for an industry job, for an in-house job. And actually, the role that I interviewed was for a program manager. Like, that's the role that I interviewed for. And because I had so much business analyst experience, they ended up offering me a product management role. Right, so it just worked out by accident. I feel this was also many years ago, more than 10 years ago. I feel like that wouldn't happen today because product management has really exploded as a very competitive field. So I was lucky that I was hired as a product manager, even though I wasn't really going for that role.
I feel exactly the same way, that product management has changed so much in the last 10 years that if I were to start all over again, I would have to go through a little bit more training and, to own the skills that I need now. So how did you learn? So you basically were in this role now as a product manager. Uh-huh. How did you learn the skills? How did you know what to do?
Yeah. So for my first few years as a product manager, I would say it did take me about a couple of years to really understand what my role is. What is it that I'm doing? Especially because I came from consulting, right, where we as a team would recommend, but we wouldn't make the decision. So for me, going into product manager, that was a very different mind shift to make. So I remember having this conversation with my coworker, when I was saying, oh, business has to make that decision. And she's like, we are the business. We have to make that decision. So it was a big mind shift for me. And I really did struggle for the first few years. And what helped was two things. Number one, some really great managers and mentors. And because I wanted to do the right thing. I was just struggling to figure out what my role was, right? So kind of saying, okay, this is your responsibility. This is the outcome that you need to drive. And the second thing that I highly recommend everybody can do is find other people you admire, right? And see what do they do, right? By observing other people, other great product managers, I was like, all right, that's what I need to do to get to their level, right? To be as great as them. So I think those were the two things that really helped me.
Thank you so much for offering that advice. And I wanted to ask you, what did you wish you had known? If you had to go back to when you first got that role, what do you wish you had known?
So two things. One is specific to product management. Product management is a very broad field, right? And one of the upside is you can pretty much define your role. You can decide what kind of a product manager you want to be, business focused, technology focused, UX focused. I didn't really know that. Like, I kept waiting for somebody to tell me, like, this is what you are supposed to do. Like, I wish I had known that, oh, it's up to me. I can decide what I want to do. And the second one, I think this is more of a more general thing, is I was very scared of stepping on toes, on other people's toes, right? So I was very tentative, in taking action, making decisions. And in fact, I was talking to a fresh college graduate yesterday, and the advice I gave him was that, you know, don't worry about stepping on toes. Like, just start doing stuff. Right. And more often than not, people will recognize you for that rather than resent you. So I wish I had known when I started my career as a product manager, just jump in and start doing.
I know. I feel exactly the same way. I wish I had known that I could lead without authority.
Yeah.
You know, I was always worried that somebody would get upset and go to my boss. So that's why I always say to the product managers, please use your voice. Voice is that's your strength. Use it. Thank you so much for that. I'm so glad you feel the same way, because that's exactly how I felt starting out. Thank you so much, Paru. So Paru, one of my favorite things is your website, unseenbattlespodcast.com. I love your tagline, an inside look into the struggles and triumphs of women leaders. And some of these struggles that no one tells you about. No one tells you when you first start out in product management how to handle them. And I'm just curious, what motivated you to wanting to create such a platform so that women can tell these stories?
Yeah, and Ronki, you were a guest on my podcast last year, and you shared your very courageous story, so thank you for that. So what led me to create this platform? You know, a couple of years ago, I went through a very hard time in my professional life. You know, things were not going well. I kind of felt stuck. And it was what I remember from that time that it was a very lonely experience, right? I kept feeling like, oh, if there was somebody else in my place, they would have figured out what to do, right? They would have hustled. They wouldn't have been in this position. They would have found other opportunities. And it just like it was a very lonely, depressing time. And then when I started talking to other people, I started getting the inside scoop that, wait, actually, everybody goes through that experience, right? But because people don't discuss it openly, I didn't really know this. I had really internalized that failure, right? And then it made me, and then as I talked to more and more women, I realized it's a very common experience that when we are going through a rough time, we tend to think this is happening to me because I am doing something. But such things happen to everyone. So that was my goal. I wanted to make failure, I wanted to make struggle less lonely, right? And so, you know, so what I have done in the podcast is try to find successful women, you know, and have them highlight, an experience in their career where they were struggling, where they had failed, and what they learned from it. And my hope is that as others go through those experiences, they're like, oh yeah, it's just part of this journey. Like, everybody goes through it. It's not just me. It's the journey that I am on. So that was my motivation.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm super grateful that you did, because I used to feel exactly the same way, especially being a young PM, right?
Yeah.
And also when I started out 10 years ago, there weren't a lot of people that looked like me, right?
Yeah.
In product management. And there weren't a lot of people that look like you as well in product management.
Yeah,
there weren't brown and black people in product management, not as much anyway. And that was just it, right? I mean, you go through these experiences and you feel like it must be something that you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And there was nobody to help you. And I kind of feel like the world has changed so much now that we have more people, more diversity in product management, but also I feel like employees care about their employers care about their employees so much now that they are paying attention to making sure that their well-being is also being taken care of.
Care, absolutely. So, yeah, that has been a very positive change, for sure.
So if I might ask you, obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of your site and your podcast. What other responses have you gotten from other people, from other women?
So the response has been amazing. So, you know, what I'm really grateful for. So I was a little bit apprehensive when I started this podcast, right? So for one, I hadn't really done a podcast in the past or before. So I was worried if I will be able to do it. But then I was also worried if I would find women who would be willing to openly share their, you know, struggles and failures, because it is being vulnerable, right? And it is sharing, putting something out there. And I, like, you know, I did, like, my first attempt I thought was pretty good. But I was really, really happy to find that there were so many people who were willing to be so open about their experience to help others. And the my episodes have really resonated with people. You know, the one that specifically comes to mind is actually the last episode of my season one was about anxiety. And so many people reached out to me about their experience, like how they also feel this low hum of anxiety in the background and how it really weighs heavily on them, right? So I was just very grateful that the content is resonating, and hopefully it's helping a few people.
Oh, it absolutely is. And please continue the work you're doing. Like you, I was just as surprised as well, but that women were sharing their stories, but I'm happy that they are, because I feel like we are helping to build up the next generation of product leaders to let them know they are not alone, right? Like we all go through these things, and here are the tools to manage them, right? For me, it was imposter syndrome. You know that feeling when you're in a conference room and like you just don't belong in there? You know, so thank you so much for the work that you've been doing there. Deeply appreciative. So Parul, I kind of want to talk a little bit about the impact of the pandemic. How would you say the impact of the pandemic has changed your workforce strategies, such as how do you put your direct report first in the middle of these uncertainties?
Yeah. So for in the pandemic, I started a new role. And, you know, so I have a team and I haven't really met any of them. So for the first challenge for me was to establish relationships with them virtually, right? Which took longer than if we were in person together. But over time, as we have worked together, as we have worked on the same projects, as we have struggled together to get stuff done, we have, you know, we have built that bond. But as a manager, what I realized was that I had to change my expectations a little bit, because the main challenge I feel with working virtually is you have to give people flexibility, right? Especially parents are like really struggled last year when kids were home, you know, especially those with younger kids. So you just like, that is their priority. That has to be their priority. And you have to give them flexibility to do work on their own time. At the same time, you have to build engagement, right? Because, you know, people are more engaged at work when they feel connected with their coworkers, right? And this was especially important to me because I was new. So I had to find the right balance where, I am talking to them often enough, but also have that expectation that you, to a large extent, you decide when we talk. So one big switch that I made is usually I do 1 hour one-on-ones with my directs, and sometimes they cancel it. Sometimes we do half an hour. I am not tied to that time. That's really for them to decide if they want to do it or not. But I end up pinging them and talking to them about 10 minutes or so every day about something or the other. So I'm really prioritizing shorter, quicker communication over longer meetings. And for me, that has really worked.
I love that because studies have shown that when employees feel like their employers care about them, it motivates them and engagement goes up. So even if you don't have your standard 1 hour with them, you're checking in at least for every 10 minutes. You're checking in with them every day for at least 10 minutes to see how they're doing. Yeah. I think that's really great. So if I might
go ahead. One more thing, Ronki. So this year, actually the later half of this year, once we got vaccinated, things have been a little bit different, right? People have been eager to go out. Right. So something else I'm trying to do is like anybody wants time off, like even at a short notice, I will make it work. So I had this somebody on my team who is a really big Taylor Swift fan, as am I. And she had an opportunity to go see Taylor Swift at a very short notice. And so she wanted to take a Thursday and Friday off. And we had to move meetings around. But those are the kind of things I never want to sweat for my team. Like if there is something that's exciting happening and you want to do it, go do it. Like, as long as you're still accountable for what you need to get done, right? I really don't want, like, be an adult. I don't want to be manage your time. And I'm lucky enough that I have a team where I, you know, I am successful in doing that, and they are successful in managing their own time.
I love how you build people around you. That is so awesome.
Thank you.
So what I was going to ask you is, so you're new to a brand new organization in the middle of a pandemic. How did you assimilate into their culture? How did you figure out what to do if everything was being done virtually?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, to a large extent, the culture of an organization is its people, right? So, you know, so obviously my first priority was to get to know my team, the engineering team, the other teams that I was going to work with. But something else I have tried to do is also get to know people outside of my immediate team and organization. So, for example, I am part of these women product director group that meets monthly, right? There is also women at Indeed that I haven't been able to participate yet, but it's on my list of things to do. So I'm also trying to find social groups at work that I can be a part of. So I have, you know, joined this book club at work. But yeah, I mean, that's what I have been trying to do, kind of hear the journeys of people who have been there for a while, right? How did they get to Indeed? And then what has their journey been like there?
No, that's great. So if I might ask you, what worked and what didn't when it came to your direct reports? What did you find, you know, just didn't work at all? If you can elaborate a little bit on that.
So what didn't work at all? Let me think of that. I think this is not specific to pandemic. In general, what I have realized is the same strategies do not work for everyone. The same incentives don't really work on everyone, right? Everybody is motivated by different things, right? There are people who are really motivated about shipping products. There are people who are really motivated by, like, thinking the next big idea. Right. So for me, and in, you know, when I was a new manager, I had read some books on management, and I was trying to do the same thing for everyone. That just did not work. Right. You can't really have the same management style for all of your direct reports for your entire team. You really have to figure out what motivates them and, like, try to make that happen for them. Like, that's when, you know, you will be successful and they will be successful. So that's not really specific to the pandemic, but that's something I have learned, Ronki.
Oh, no, that's great. So building off of that, would you say that your leadership style has evolved because you've had to work from home for the last 19 months? And, like, can you talk through that a little bit, or is it just about the same?
Oh, absolutely, it has changed. I feel like I had a need for control that I have had to, like, learn to give up and be comfortable with, you know, being in a new job, being in a virtual environment. And to be honest, it has been a very freeing experience for me, right? Where, like, I just have had to trust that people are doing their job. I will get the outcome that I'm looking for, right? And I do, and most of the time I do. And if I don't, then I figure out, okay, what are the other checks and balances that I need to insert? But I definitely feel like this pandemic has helped me grow as a more mature manager.
Well, that's awesome. I feel like I agree with you. The pandemic has definitely impacted my leadership style as well. Not only do I want to build up everybody around me, even if they end up leaving and, you know, seeking other opportunities, but I also want to help the next generation, right? That's been the thing, is I keep thinking, what legacy, what are we leaving for the next leaders that are going to come along and do the work we're doing? So thank you so much for that, Paru.
I also have a lot more empathy. So I don't have kids, Ronki, but I feel like, you know, in observing my sister, who has a 9-year-old and she's working full time, her husband works full time, my other friends who are in a similar situation, I have a lot more empathy for parents now than I did before. Because, like I mentioned, I feel like this pandemic has been especially hard for them.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you've seen some of the studies that women have been, they've been the one to bear the brunt of the pandemic the most. Yeah. They're most likely to get laid off from work. Women don't get paid for the household chores that they do. Women are also taking care of their spouses' families in some cases and their own family and extended family members through the pandemic. And yet it's a, you know, it's a thankless job, right?
Yeah.
So no, absolutely. By the way, the other thing I've been doing on my end is for the moms that are on my team, at 8 o'clock, I don't schedule 8 o'clock meetings or 8:30 meetings. I schedule 9 a.m. meetings.
Yeah, good for
they,
you.
Yeah. And if they can't make it, I record the call, you know, and I send it to them. At 4 o'clock, I try to make sure I don't schedule calls after 4 p.m., you know. And if someone wants to schedule an 8 o'clock call at night, I try to talk them out of it to see if it's something we can do in the daytime. Because they're putting the kids to sleep, you know. So So thank you so much for that feedback. So Paro, the questions I get the most from aspiring product managers and recent college grads who are interested in product management space is, how has the pandemic impacted the discipline of product management?
Yeah, the one big change I see, I don't think it's specific to product management, but I definitely think it's bigger for product management, is that it has made this profession more accessible. Right? Pre-pandemic, co-location was a very big theme, right? Oh, the product manager and the teams have to be co-located, right? Which basically meant you needed to be in the Bay Area or in one of the coasts or one of the bigger cities to be a product manager, right? And I feel like the pandemic has really shattered that model, right? For good, like there are definitely benefits of co-location, but we have been, because we were forced to, we have been able to be creative and find other ways to collaborate, even though we are not co-located, like even across multiple time zones. So I feel like the big thing for product management coming out of this pandemic is you can be located anywhere and be a product manager and find a role. One of my, I've shared this in some of the other podcasts, one of my goals is to live in Bali, Indonesia and be a product manager. And I feel like now it's possible because of the pandemic.
Oh, no, you're right. You can do your work just about from anywhere these days,
anywhere,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So as a manager, in this time that we're living in, this uncertainties with a lot of ambiguities, what are the skills that are essential for product managers to be successful?
Empathy, I think, is a big one, right? If you are in a meeting and somebody is not quite there because they have something going on with, you have been on meetings where there are kids in the background, that there are pets in the background and the person is distracted, right? So sometimes maybe just understanding that this might not be the best time to have this conversation, right? Giving that the other person some space. So I think empathy always is important for product managers. I think communication skills have become even more important, right? The email volume has gone up, Slacks have gone up, number of meetings have gone up. So how do you make your message short and concise and tailor it for your audience so that, you know, it's impactful? It's also a good use of their time. So I think these are just timeless product management skills, but I think they're even more important in our current reality.
I know, I completely agree with you. By the way, when it comes, not just even for the person on the phone that you're on a call with, but I find myself that I constantly have to make sure that I'm present.
Yeah.
I'm present. I'm fully present in that conversation. So that means for me, sometimes I turn off my phones, I turn off my iPads, and I just sit there and I look at that person on the camera and I'm with them. I write things down just to repeat it back to them to make sure that they feel heard.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like in the beginning of the pandemic, I was really distracted. I would be, you know how you were in meetings and someone would go, "So Ronki, what do you think?"
I feel like I've definitely agreed to stuff Ronki where I did not know what I was agreeing to.
Exactly, right? And you're right. I mean, by the way, some people find it to be like bothersome, but I love it when kids show up on camera.
Yeah.
Because they're kids, right? And they're so innocent. I love it because I think it humanizes that person, their parent, right?
It suddenly becomes a fun call.
Exactly. I love it. One of my leaders, and I mean, this person is, you know, huge leadership role. Yeah. And their kids always show up on camera.
That's so cute.
Exactly. And he's like, "Dad, lunchtime, you know." So.
There you go, I don't care if you're on a call. It's my time to eat.
Absolutely. So, empathy, man. I mean, just checking in, just seeing how the person, you know, your colleagues are doing. So thank you so much for mentioning that, because I feel like that's been the theme for myself as well and my colleagues, is just empathizing. and being present and listening has been the key things for us this season. So the other question I always get a lot, Parul, is should I go get a certification course? Should I go through a certification course or should I just focus on an MBA? And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that for aspiring PMs and recent college grads.
Yeah, so I would say that I do not have an MBA. And for like maybe until 5 years ago, I was myself wondering if I should go get one. Should I have gotten one? Would that have been helpful? And I don't know if there is a really good answer. Like, so at this stage in my career, I don't think I need one, right? Because I feel like I have learned enough on the job that maybe with MBA, I could have learned that faster. But I feel like I don't really think I need one anymore. The people who do have gone through this experience, I know what they value is the networks they get out of the MBA. So I do think it's a personal choice, right? If you feel like you would get something out of it, you would enjoy that experience, then absolutely go for it. I don't think it's a requirement for the job. In fact, I think we are moving towards a world where, you know, Deb Liu or Gib Biddle, these are really successful product leaders with degrees in philosophy and English and like not really a business or even a technical background. So it's definitely a personal choice. For certification, I did do one certification. This was a Berkeley program, a week-long program. But I would say at that time, I was a very early career PM. Right. So they were talking about pricing models and negotiation and it didn't really apply to me. Like I wasn't at a stage where I would benefit from it. So certifications can be useful, but just be very targeted about what is it that you're looking for. Right. And then get a certification for that.
Thank you so much for that. So back to your earlier point, right, as you mentioned, I've noticed it as well that when I first started out in product management, hiring managers focused on hard skills. Yeah. But I kind of feel like soft skills are now the most important thing that people look for in product managers because you have to be able to motivate an organization.
Yeah. So, Ronki, I am curious, what do you tell people when they ask you this certification and MBA?
So because obviously, you know, I have an MBA.
I don't know that, okay.
Yeah, so I did. And my motivation for getting an MBA was because I looked around and there weren't a lot of people that looked like me. As chief product officers, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I kept trying to figure out, well, how, if I want to become a chief product officer one day, how do I get there? And everybody that I looked at had an MBA, except of course for Steve Jobs, right?
Okay.
But they all had MBAs, especially women. I remember I was reading a Fortune magazine about 50 women in corporate America or something like that. And I kept looking and most of them had an MBA, including Sheryl Sandberg. So I thought, okay, well, all right, maybe I should seek it. But that was my intention. But what I found was that what an MBA gives me is the ability to manage an organization, right? To explain, okay, there's a reorg. Here's why the reorg is happening. Or to, it's sharpened my presentation skills. So I can present better to our leaders. But I feel like that's what it's done for me. But at the end of the day, the skill sets that I use every single day, I want to say it's my soft skills. That's the most important thing because I'm motivating, right? I got to motivate a group of people to believe in a product vision, to help bring it to fruition, and to answer their questions along the way and make sure that they are staking their careers on a great project, right? So I feel like my soft skills have sort of overridden my hard skills.
Hard skills, okay. Right. So yeah, I mean, basically, this is what I understood, right? That yes, if you get an MBA, you're definitely going to expedite acquiring certain skills, right? On the field, it would take you 5 years. An MBA, you will learn in 2 years or less, right? But it's not necessary. You can also take those 5 years. Eventually, you will get it. Right. You will get there.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you there. So I'm also going to ask you about interview tips. And this comes up a lot, especially with recent college grads and aspiring PMs, that what are the interview tips that I would recommend for them? And I always tell them, please, please, please go to LinkedIn and follow the CEO of that organization. See what that person is putting out there. Understand their corporate citizenship, you know, what they're doing to make the world a better place. And I'm just curious, what are your tips?
That is a really good tip, Ronki, that I will start following myself. My so I you know, I have been through a number of interviews where I was not successful. And my number one tip is practice, practice, practice. And practice means going through a lot of interviews where you are not successful. As product management is a skill, so is interviewing for product management. It is really a skill on its own. And the more you practice through mocks, through actual interviews, the better you will get. Like, it's not rocket science. It's not an innate skill that somebody is born with. It's just a matter of practice. Like, give it 3 months of really dedicated time and you will see huge results, very good results. So yes, like, never think that a job is out of your reach. It's just a matter of practice.
I told a recent college grad yesterday that a big company didn't move me ahead in the interview. And the person looked at me like, what do you mean? You're so good at your job. I'm like, but no, those things happen. And it's a good thing that they happen because they make me a better interviewer. They make me a better leader. Yeah. And I even explained to them that you must be uncomfortable. I think being uncomfortable is important because it helps you to grow. So I offered similar advice yesterday. So thank you so much for confirming that too. So Parul, if I might ask you, what is your number one advice to a recent college grad or any person out there that wants to get into product management?
So I get approached by a lot of engineers or QA folks, right, who are trying to break into product management. And there are two things that I tell them. The first one is, in general, it is easiest to make the switch in the company that you are currently at, right? So if, for example, you are at company A, you have a manager who you have credibility with people around you, right? If you were to go and tell them, I want to try a new role, they're going to be, the likelihood that you will succeed there is a lot higher than you applying to a new company. Right. So if you really want to be a product manager, I would highly suggest try find opportunities at the organization that you are in. The second thing I would say is start doing the role. Like, in whatever position that you are in, identify a small part of what a product manager does. You know, creating customer journeys, understanding the customer experience, defining the future state, and just start doing it. Because a lot of time, it snowballs. People see, oh, you're already doing this, and they give you more responsibility. So again, don't wait for permission. Don't wait to be asked. Just start doing it.
I love that advice. Create your own opportunities. Don't wait for someone to create one for you. So that has been my theme this year, Parul.
Nice.
So thank you for that. So Parul, during this pandemic season, what is it that has kept you going?
Oh my gosh, Ronki. I think TV, a lot of TV, just like an unhealthy amount of watching TV on my couch, and food. Like I said, when the pandemic had first started, every Friday I would wrap up work and I will go get pizza or I will get a, you know, I'll go to In-N-Out or I will go get an ice cream. And really, I feel like last year was my year of TV and food. And I eventually realized that's not a sustainable, lifestyle for me. So since then I've tried to be a little bit more better organized, right? I am reading a lot more. Now I am going for more hikes with my friends. So, but what has kept me going is the hope that one day this would be over. I think that's what has kept me going.
Yeah, I feel you, my friend. When we first came home last year, I don't think I knew what to do with myself. I went through phases.
Yeah.
There was a phase where I cooked everything.
Oh, look at that.
No, but it wasn't healthy. So then I stopped doing that. And then I went through a phase where I just wanted chocolate cake.
Yeah.
I wanted to eat my feelings. And then eventually I settled on just walking 4 to 5 miles a day.
There you go. Much healthier than chocolate cake.
No, but you know what though? Even though I see, you know, I love seeing people outside. When I go to the malls and I see people wearing their masks, I feel a little bit better that way coming back, you know, that
I things agree. Are,
yeah, exactly. And my friends, some of my friends are back to work and they're wearing their masks. So that makes me feel a little bit better. So then now let's talk about the fun stuff.
All right.
So what is your favorite word?
What is my favorite word? Friday. Comes Friday. Very close. So I'll say it's kind of boring, but I do really like that word, which is due diligence. Right? Which I feel like if everybody did their due diligence, it will make meetings much shorter. It will make decisions a lot better, a lot quicker. And in general, it will make all of us better informed.
I do like that.
I am a big proponent of everybody doing their due diligence.
I do. I love that. What is your least favorite word?
So in product management, it's not that it's my least favorite word, but I feel like it's an overly abused word is platform.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that it, I feel like this is overused and it's inflated and it's just like, it's just, sometimes it's used to hide when you don't have a clear vision of what you are building. So when somebody says platform, like my antenna goes up, like, okay, I need to pay attention. What's happening here? What is being built here?
That's so funny. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had this week where the word platform was used.
Edward. But I am a big fan of platforms. Right. I just feel like it's not being used too loosely.
My least favorite word is this is outside my. It's outside my job. And that's my least favorite word because it's such a cop out, right? Like if we all did that, nothing would get done, right?
Yeah.
So
that's a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound or noise do I love? So I listen to a lot of Bollywood music. So I know you walk 4 miles. I walk about 45 minutes every night. And I usually have my Bollywood songs on, which I really enjoy.
Okay.
Usually, if I'm not able to sleep, I turn on the sound of waves, ocean waves.
Gotcha.
That's my calming, soothing sound.
Okay, you're going to die laughing. I sleep with my iPad, watching TV, and the sound that I'm sleeping to these days are comedy shows like Frasier.
Or
How I Met Your Mother. I usually have them on the background, and so when they're on, I fall asleep. So that's sort of my routine lately. So
your laugh tracks on those shows is what puts you to bed?
Yeah, it's really what does it. Like yesterday was Frasier, the night before that it was How I Met Your Mother, but like I don't even last, as soon as they're on, I don't last 5 minutes before I fall asleep.
Oh, wow.
But I love the sound of it, right? So
nice.
And then if I might ask you, what profession, other than what you're doing right now as a product leader, what other profession would you attempt?
What other profession would I attempt? So when I was younger, I wanted to be a newsreader on television. Whoever hosts the 8 p.m. news so that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. I think now I would really like to be a professional public speaker. Like a motivational public speaker. Like that is what I would like to do next.
Oh, I love it. So my favorite news person at night is Brian Williams on MSNBC at 11 p.m. Eastern time zone. And the reason why I love to listen to him and I'm always in awe of his show is because he self-taught. He didn't go to an Ivy League school. In fact, I don't even believe he graduated college the last time I read his biography.
I did not know that, okay.
But you wouldn't know it. Because he sounds like Christie. He sounds like all these old school newscasters, and he's self-taught. So every time I listen to him, I always go, "How can I be just as good as this man?"
Good as him,
you know, because he just knows the question to ask, and he's funny.
He's funny, in an
underappreciated way.
Right.
So so that kind of just piqued my interest when you said, you know, like a newscaster. Right now. I'm with you. I really love giving back to the PM community. Yeah. I love inspiring new PM. So I think I'm kind of there with you. Right now, I sort of feel like I want to get my voice out there, my leadership voice out there more. So I'm with
you. And you're doing a great job of it, Ronki. Oh, you're doing a great job of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Are you kidding me? But I'm only able to do that because of great people like you and the work that you're doing as well. And I feel like together, we're going to make a huge difference in the world. So I told you my junk food confidence is chocolate cake. It still is.
Uh-huh.
What is yours? What is your go-to junk food?
I think In-N-Out burger and fries. So I go there, I get a cheeseburger, and I get the animal fries. And some days I will also get a strawberry shake, but that's thankfully pretty rare. But I think that's my go-to food.
Junk food. I love it. I have to try that, by the way. I've never tried. So I moved to California 3 years ago. I've not been to In-N-Out burger.
Try it. I think you might like it.
I'm afraid I'm going to like it, and I'm going to go there every week.
Yes, you are absolutely right.
So, So, Parul, thank you so much for joining the podcast today, Product Magic, about product makers who build great products and people. So where can our listeners find you online?
I am very active on LinkedIn, and you can just search by my name, Parul Goyal. As Ronki had mentioned and I had talked about, I also have a podcast called Unseen Battles. So you can find the podcast, some of my other talks on unseenbattlespodcast.com as well.
Thank you, Parul. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, Ronki, thank you so much. It was just so much fun talking to you.